works. There's a person there. Non-self. Okay. So this is the 11th talk in the series on the paramis, and it's about the 9th parami, which is the parami of loving kindness. And we can title this talk, I gave it the title, The Great Embrace. The Great Embrace. The Big Hug. And loving kindness is metta in the Pali, or mitra in the Sanskrit, which is like kalyana mita. It's the same, mita and mitra. It's translated as friendliness. And metta as friendliness is a very good translation. And it's a friendliness that is about our relationship with everything. So it's about relationship with the world. Now, in the Buddhist tradition, the word citta is the kind of heart-mind process. And it is very similar to Western psychology, which says, with every thought, there is what's called affect. Affect being some kind of tiny feeling with every thought. Even the interest that makes this thought arise and not another one is already the movement of the heart. Because we're not machines. We are living beings with heart and mind that are running together. They are in parallel. So citta is heart-mind. And in the East, it's very much located here. In the West, we have our mind is sort of dominating, that all the energy goes here, or the definition of what it is that we see is in this part of the body. But in the East, it's very much this part of the body. We see from here. And there's this very nice story of a Tibetan that was being experimented on. And he had all kinds of electrodes on his head, and they were trying to do some experiments on meditation, the brain waves on meditation. And he was laughing like a child, and they said to him, "Why are you laughing?" He said, "Because you put all your machine's electrodes in the wrong place." Because everything's happening from here, the heart. Here is nothing's happening here. So, all the things that we turn our attention to, wanting to be happy, wanting to be successful, liking something, not liking something, wanting to think this and not that, having an interest there and not there, choosing what to do and how to do it, choosing what to think, what to feel, being guided by feelings that move us in this direction or another direction. The heart is talking all the time, in every moment, in every micro moment. And every thought has a quality of feeling in it. And there isn't any knowing without some love. And I think it's nice the way in the Bible, the biblical word yeda is also loving. It's sexual loving. But it's loving. And our whole life, if we look at it, we are receiving, like mother's milk, chalav em, we are receiving mother's milk, we are giving. We are receiving, we are giving. So the heart is actually engaged all the time. Whenever we're in relationship, there is a heart element to it. In the Buddhist tradition, as in the Western world, this has tended to be reduced or forgotten. And there is a kind of domination in Buddhist practice of the wisdom tradition, Panya. And a lot of that is commentary on the ancient suttas, the early texts, and after that came the commentaries, the Visuddhimagga, the path of purification, the Abhidharma, and a lot of explanations and details. And a lot of that is quite male and quite wisdom-oriented. Concentration practices are very dominant. It's a little bit forgetting the power of metta, not just as a special practice, heart practice, but as a practice for awakening. That metta itself is a practice for awakening along with everything else. So the heart can awaken just like the consciousness through concentration. In the Sutta Nipata, which is perhaps the earliest of all texts, it says, "There is no better mindfulness in this world, no better way to live in this world than the practice of metta. It is a path to awakening." It's really picking out metta as a path to awakening itself, and along with panya, or the wisdom. And it's quite basic to our practice, because we can't really imagine an expanded mind with a contracted heart. They just don't go together. An expanded mind, a free mind, has to go with a free heart. An expanded mind would be open, aware, sensitive, awake mind, but a contracted heart would say, not this, not this, I don't like that, that's no good, this doesn't work, they don't go together. They have to be together. And in truth, if we forget for a minute everything that we've learned about metta as a very detailed or special technique, just forget it for the moment, and see metta more built in to our practice of Dharma. We'll understand it better. Metta as kindness is, for example, not having resistance, is about appreciation, is about acceptance, being with what's happening. We're talking all the time. It's fundamental to vipassana, it's fundamental to our meditation, that we allow things to be what they are, and that's already metta. We are making friends with our demons, shedim. We're making friends with our thought. Think of a poem of, like the guest house, which is being read constantly in the Vipassana community, allowing the guests to arrive. Any thought, any impression, any discomfort or comfort, allowing it to be there, inviting it in for a cup of tea. That's metta already. So metta is very much part of the tradition that we're practicing. It's an essential part. It's built in. Interesting that I was talking to Mark Williams a couple of years ago in Oxford, and he created a kind of technique, a therapeutic mindfulness called MBCT, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. And I was talking about metta in the mindfulness, and he said it's an essential component, and that he was doing some studies, scientific studies, on MBCT, and found that if they did it in a different way that had no compassion and kindness in it, it didn't work. The whole thing didn't work. Mindfulness didn't work unless it had compassion, kindness, allowing, friendliness with your inner life. It was essential to basic mindfulness, even rather technical mindfulness, but it was basic. It needed to be there, otherwise the thing didn't work. So the problem is not only that we don't appreciate how much metta is already in our practice, the problem is that when we look, and the basic problem is when we look at our heart life, it's sort of a cacophonia and not music. It feels like it's an uncontrollable kind of noise of irritations and angers and resistance and switching off and getting into arguments with people and conflict and being really around me and myself and protecting myself and insecurities and all of that stuff. And it seems that our heart keeps going there. And that's not music at all. And somehow we feel that the love is nice to talk about it, but it sort of vanishes very quickly. And when we have an argument with somebody, where's the metta gone? And it happens fast, and we have a bad day, or we're tired, and we're irritated all day with our sons and daughters, our friends, our partners, the bus drivers, and the Tel Aviv street, and ourselves when we don't like ourselves very much. And we say, where's the heart gone? Where's the music of the heart? And that's the problem that we all face. And the thing is that we can't really control or force the heart. We can't control it. The heart isn't easy to control. And we can't force love, say, oh, I must love. I have to love. Go on, love. Quick. Love now, everybody. Oh no, I can't do that. I'm cross. You can't control love. You can't force it. And you can't control other people either. And so our relationships are always giving us opportunities for problems and not loving heart language. So that's why we need to pay attention to metta and practice it. And we need to practice metta without control, without trying to control the heart. And that's our subtle practice here. There's a practice there called metta bhavana. That's what the tradition calls it, metta bhavana. Bhavana is cultivation. Tipuach, or encouragement. And the practice is about recognizing the heart's kindness and friendliness, and then, in a way, stabilizing it, never mind what the conditions are. So that, yes, indeed, someone can say something challenging to us, but there's something stable in our friendliness that will not be destroyed, even under conditions of difficulty where our heart is challenged. And there's many ways to do this, but it's a sense of being a mother. It's a sense of being, in a way, able to hold our life and other people's life. It's a sense of friendliness that we can actually practice it by just reminding the heart that it's possible. Just like we practiced earlier, something very simple like appreciation. I forgot to appreciate that this life that's going through me is very precious. I forgot. I assumed it. Muvan meila, I'm alive. But it's not at all. It's not at all assumed. It's a gift that we can appreciate every minute. So if we just remember that, it's not controlling, it's not forcing, it's just remembering, well, yes, I can appreciate my life. Or I can appreciate the other person's life. Even the person that's arguing with me right now. But they are alive. And they've been a child. And I can be a little bit of a mother to them, whoever they are. Even if they're annoying me. Even if they're also doing other things to my heart. I remember that when we were doing peace walks all through Israel, quite a few years we were doing peace walks with Israeli Jews and Arabs, Palestinians sometimes. And the practice of metta was very much part of the middle way, of the peace walks we did. And we used to practice it through cities, but also through countryside, to cows and to dogs passing by and to a person that we met and to a bird in the air, and then in the cities to people we passed by. And if someone would shout at us, "Go home, Arabs," or things like that, we would react with friendliness. And the friendliness, I don't know if that was the thing that did it, but we never ever had physical violence against us. We had sometimes verbal violence, but not a lot. And we kept responding with friendliness. And I mentioned this before, but I remember one walk we did was so lovely, with 300 people going from East Barta to the separation wall, and it was 300 Palestinians and Israelis, maybe 200 Palestinians, 100 Israelis and foreigners, and we went to the wall and we danced outside the wall, and the soldiers were very happy. They laughed and they were kind of relaxed and they could talk to us, and it just friendliness, just reminding that it's possible, even in the most of the heart of conflict, to be friendly, and it changes the energies. So that was one of the themes. If you ask what's one of the powers that the Dharma has to solve conflict, it is the use of metta. It's the use of basic friendliness. Any human being, you look at them in the eyes and you see them as a friend, whoever they are, even if they have a gun in their hand pointing at you. Nevertheless, you look at them with friendly eyes. That's just fundamental.
Even to die, it will come to...
Whoever, yes. Even anybody. There are human beings, there are cows in the field, human beings with guns in their hand, human beings with flowers in their hand, doesn't matter. Friendliness. And anyway, it's probably the best protection. I think probably you're much less protected if you don't have that. Friendliness is a pretty good weapon in inverted commas, in many situations that might otherwise make conflict worse. It tends to reduce fire of anger and conflict. It tends to reduce the fire. The formal practice, which you may have met, and I don't assume that you've done it, You may have met it or you may not have met it before, but it's a practice that has been quite well established in Buddhist practice, and it's using sentences, mishpatim. And may you be happy is a sentence that's used. May you be happy and peaceful. And the power of sentences, they're like a mantra. They, in a way, take over the space of the mind, and they can, because their sentence is a power, it's a word, it's stronger, it's words, and it can trigger the heart. And the way you use sentences here is not that just to chant them meaninglessly, but a sentence, the way we teach it, is a sentence is like throwing a stone in the water and then watching the ripples, advot. So you do a sentence and then you watch the result in the heart. You don't just chant the sentences, may you be happy, may you be happy, may you be happy, like a machine. It's making the sentence powerful, letting it be there, and watching the results in the heart and in the mind. But they don't need, the sentences don't need to be there. You can do metta practice in many different ways. The ancient and the earliest practice of metta is not at all verbal, is vibrational, is a tether, is a vibration of the heart. And I want to read through and through the suttas. The practice of metta is described as practice of vibration, and I want to read very classic, this particular kind wording, this text appears many times in the suttas, the same, more or less the same language, and is always applied to four. There is metta, loving kindness, there is karuna, which is compassion, there is mudita, which is joy, along with the joy of others, and there is upekkha, which is equanimity or steadiness. Now, as a parami, metta would really cover also compassion, because metta is fundamental friendliness, is really also compassion. But just like when someone is hurting, you feel for them. So that's also the process of metta, of loving kindness, or of togetherness, or of intimacy, or of empathy. And metta is based on empathy. And empathy is needed for compassion also. So in many ways, metta as a parami is something that the heart is built, the friendliness and intimacy of the heart, and compassion is in there already. So I want to read a text just to give you an idea of how this is practiced in the ancient tradition, and it tells you to how to, you can practice it also. So, a bhikkhu abides, meaning stays, does it for a period of time, is steady. Pervading means spreading, the fazer, pizur, one quarter of the whole 360 degrees, 360 circle, one quarter, reva, with a mind full of loving kindness, and then the second quarter, and the third quarter, and the fourth quarter. So in other words, the mind just spreading in all directions loving kindness. And above, and around, and everywhere, to all beings, and also to himself. He stays pervading, spreading the entire world around with a mind full of loving kindness, with shefa, abundant, exalted, meaning high or lifted up. Hitromem in Hebrew, exalted. Mimi. Mirumam. Immeasurable. You can't measure. You can't measure the heart. So it's without measure, without hostility or negativity of any kind. And then he considers and understands this deliverance of mind through loving kindness is actually still conditioned, is actually something that I am doing. Volitionally, it needs volition, it needs intention. But whatever is conditioned and volitionally produced is impermanent and subject to ending. And understanding that, he achieves destruction of all the taints, the klesas, the problems or the patterns. And what it says at the end is that it's a way to liberation when you understand that even the friendliness is a practice, and then you let go. It's still a practice, and therefore it's conditioned, because it needs an intention to do it. So it's saying it's leading to awakening, but it isn't itself awakening. And this particular text is repeated again and again and again. It's a path to awakening, it's not itself awakening. In a way, just like every technique that we apply in the Dharma. Anything that needs developing is still conditioned by our intention to develop it. From the point of view of the Paramis, metta is one of the Brahma Viharas. Brahma Viharas would be divine, like heavenly abodes or places to be, which are heavenly, which are shmemi, which are above. And it just says that it's a place to live. It's a home. It's a place to live. But a very much cosmic home, if you like. And it tells us that metta is to be lived. It's to be part of our 24 hours experience. That is how we live in this world, through metta. So it's an important reminder that we live that. And it's just worth remembering, and I repeat it again, what I said in the meditation instructions, that the language of love can be many different languages that often we don't say is metta, but it is. The language of love expressed as appreciation, expressed as intimacy, expressed as allowing things to be what they are, Kabbalah, receiving, acceptance, expressed as warmth, human warmth, expressed as a sense of belonging together, of community, expressed as just ease, being relaxed and being with things in life, and not against, and not resisting, and not with friction. All of these are languages which are part of metta. We don't have to think that the metta is some just love, and if I don't love and I don't know what love is, then I haven't got any metta. It doesn't work for me. It does work. It's just that love has a language, and it's the way it's expressed. Feeling what it's like to be in the shoes of somebody else. It's already metta, it's empathy, it's compassion also, specifically compassion. It's the compassion as our response to the world compassion is our response, therefore it's something we do, something we feel. Someone is in pain, we respond, it's active. So this kind of, this parami is about connectedness. Some of the other paramis are more about our inner life. This one, this parami, metta, is about how we connect with the world. How we actually are with the world. And it also, like all the paramis, it grows with time, it grows with practice. It grows when we are less afraid. It grows when we are less centered on ourself and busy with ourself. It grows when we're not busy with our interests, with our needs. It's a part of our free mind and free heart. And when we don't feel it, when we feel, I don't have friendliness, I'm cross, I'm angry, I'm upset, I'm irritated, I'm tired, I'm bored, I'm guilty, I'm negative, I'm depressed, I'm anything that the heart is saying, I'm anxious, these are only our opportunities for the practice of metta. This is where we can practice metta. And we can change the music a little bit. We can say, yes, I can feel bored or tired or fed up or angry or depressed. But to that feeling, I can give metta. I can be friendly and allowing and sympathy and sympathetic and aware and compassionate to my difficult feelings. So there are already, that changes the energy of those feelings. We can apply metta and compassion to those feelings in us, and that changes the music, it changes cacophonia to music. And so when we work with hindrances, when we work with the resistances, that's where love grows. Love grows when we meet resistance. In a way, like a wheel that's turning, a wheel can only turn if it has resistance. Then it can turn. If there's no resistance, it won't go anywhere. Our love can grow when it meets resistance, because at that point, we can see we move something. We learn something. We apply love, for example, to anxiety or irritation. We say, okay, I'm anxious about something, I'm worried about something, I feel nervous about something, maybe something might happen to me or to someone we are close to. I feel that anxiety or agitation or concern or worry, but wait a minute, I can apply love, compassion to this feeling, and the feeling gets softer, and through that we're living with more love, just through that movement of applying love in the difficult places. We learn to be consistently with love 24 hours. We learn it, and it becomes part of us, and the parami grows, becomes again part of us, and again part of us, and again we remember, and the parami grows and grows. And so, like all the other paramis, there is a subtle aspect, if you like, a kind of a ultimate aspect, a mukhlat. Like all the paramis, the sort of bodhisattva element of the parami, which would be something about it which is endless and unmeasurable. And you can see it quite, in a way, easily in some of the practices that we're doing, that we've been doing for with the love. For example, when we practice love towards something, like a mood in our own body or a difficulty that we experience, a difficult thought, so we send metta to it, that in a way is conditioned. It has a form, a thought, is a form or a person. But then we begin to move out of there to something universal. Not just a thought, but to all beings who are thinking, to all negativity, to all beings everywhere, to the whole universe. And then we're in the same, as the text, we're in the same place, that we're spreading without any boundaries or without any address. We're spreading our heart energy. So it's moving to from form to the formless. And the formless is endless. It's immeasurable. Just spreading out to all beings, to every ant, to every bird, to every fish, to every being, to every human being, including Daesh, including everybody. It doesn't matter. There's no restriction. The heart is just flowing out to all. And that is already the formless world, the vibrational world, something unlimited, something ultimate. One of the great, I think Thich Nhat Hanh, he expresses metta more beautifully than any teacher that I know. His language and the way he expresses it is so beautiful. And if you want to have to read language of a master who embodies loving kindness, then read Thich Nhat Hanh's texts or talks or whatever. And just a small quote here. And he believes, he keeps saying that the next Buddha is the Buddha Maitreya, the Buddha of love. Maitri is Sanskrit for love, or metta. True love within the Buddhist teachings has to contain the element of loving kindness. Maitri is loving kindness. And loving kindness is the capacity to offer happiness. It's a process of learning, because to make the other person happy, you need to be there. You need to learn how to look at him or her. You need to learn how to talk to him or to her. Making another person happy is an art that we have to learn. It's not because we bring him or her a lot of money that we can make him or her happy, but the way we live, the freshness we have, the tolerance we have. You are just there by his or her side, and the other person enjoys your presence, enjoys your company, because your person contains loving kindness. It radiates loving kindness. And whatever you do can bring him or her a lot of happiness. The word you say, a look that you direct at that person, that's enough to make him or her very happy. Just it can come through a look, through a word. It doesn't need to be more than that. And the ultimate loving kindness and compassion is based on interbeing. And this is really the final thing I want to say. It's based on the sense that we are all together in one universe, one world, that we're all interacting, we're all interbeing, we're all together. All beings are really joining together in one community. That understanding is also the mind and the heart of the Bodhisattva. It's the mind and the heart that has no limit. It's immeasurable, like the Brahma Viharas. We cannot measure it. And I want to finish with three words from a Zen phrase, which is so lovely. A Zen phrase that says, "What's the heart of a liberated person? It's a gentle breeze under the open sky."